Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is the Counter-Ruck Six Nations podcast brought to you by the Irish Times in association with Nifty Business. I'm your host, Nathan Johns. I'm joined in studio by John O'Sullivan. And all the way from Genoa in Italy, I believe, is Gordon Darcy. Darcy, how are you? Tell us a little bit about what brings you over to Italy.
Yeah, sitting here in sunny Genoa. Just had a lovely double espresso to wake up. I'm part of the Dotty 8 cycle. So we are cycling the match ball for the Scotland-Italy match all the way from Oban in Scotland down to Rome. So it's about 1,800 miles in around 100 hours. So I'm part of the Leap team. So our van has brought us a little bit forward. Rob Wainwright is taking his time. Dragging his ass, coming in from Monaco, probably stopping to wave to royalty, that kind of thing. So we're waiting for them to come in, and then we've got a big climb ahead of us to get out of Genoa and start straight down to Rome.
Just to be clear, you're not actually currently on a bicycle as you speak to us.
No,
that would be very impressive.
I'm not. No. We had our shift last night, so we were about 1 a.m. It's like 100 hours straight, so we're cycling straight through the thing, two teams. So I was about 3 o'clock, I was descending some mountain, which was at very small walls and big steep drops over the far side of it, at -7 degrees. And I gotta say, it was interesting.
One of those watershed moments where you question every life decision you've made, I'm sure. Yeah.
I'd say he was channeling his inner Sean Kelly probably at that stage.
Yeah, it's one of those things when you see it in daylight, you're like, oh, actually, I was probably happier it was dark so I couldn't actually see what was down the side of the wall.
God, well, on that terrifying note. remind us again, Darcy, what's the name of the charity?
It's for motor neuron disease. So this is the charity set up by Dotty Weir. So this is the Dotty Aid cycle. All roads lead to Rome. So Google it, have a look, and you'll be able to make any donations there if you can.
When did you start?
We started at 10 o'clock Sunday night. So since then, yeah.
You've been in a van ever since.
Yeah. Yeah, like we're sleeping, there's like four of us in a camper van here. It's pretty grim. And the toilet doesn't work.
The toilet doesn't work
in the camper van.
On that note, we should move along with the preview before we get any more detail.
It's good, great radio, but I was trying to tee up a joke about how he's clearly been in a van and hasn't shaved in over a week, but I think the toilet joke is much better. Right, well, following that lovely display of humour, we'll better get on to the fact that Ireland have named their team to face England on Saturday at Twickenham. Not a lot of surprises based on what was predicted. Hugo Keenan is fit again. He's back at fullback. Finlay Beelam comes back onto the bench ahead of Ollie Yeager. The one bit of news, I guess, that we hadn't anticipated that didn't leak out before the announcement of the team is that James Ryan is out for the rest of the Six Nations. I think he's got a bicep injury. So Ian Henderson comes back onto the bench. Darcy, I'll give you first word. Ireland team, what stands out immediately?
I don't think we were expecting many surprises in the starting 15. We knew if Keenan was fit, he comes in, he starts. And that's kind of played out. I suppose the bits of interest would have been around that outside back spot on the bench. Was it going to be Stu McCluskey? Was it going to be Frawley? Would Ringrose come in? And obviously they've stuck with what's worked with Frawley and Murray covering that kind of multitude of positions. Kind of, I know John is probably thinking in his head, what happens if a winger goes down? We can let him answer that in a while. But the bit I'm really interested in is Finlay Beelam, because obviously he wasn't picked last week when they wanted to have a look at Ollie Yeager. And to me, what's kind of interesting is they bring him back in for, and I don't want to be disrespectful and say like the match that counts, but this is the, you know, they can win the championship technically in this match. So when it's England away, there's probably a bit more on the line, and they reverted back to Beelum. One of the things I like about this is it creates the lovely little pressure on competition within the squad, which, like, I think every coach I've played for at some point has always dropped me for somebody else just to see what the other player might offer different to you. But what happens is you as a player then have to respond. And I was very lucky, I suppose, you know, or whatever. I was usually able to respond and usually came back in. And when I got, say, the next match in the November Internationals or, you know, back in for a Six Nations match or a tour match, I'd always kick on. And that's Beelum's challenge now. So Jaeger's come in, did what he did. Beelum's been playing well, but now he has to ratchet it up a notch. And this is his opportunity. And I think it sends a lovely, subtle message within the squad that Andy Farrell is thinking about positions, people. I think it's a really, you create, I think, like a lovely positive peer pressure with a move like that.
When Darce is preempting what you're going to say, I think that's a sign that we have probably spent too much time together over the last 6 weeks, if not before, given that I know the two of you are very close friends. But let's get on to that. I think it's quite clear that Frawley is on the bench just because Ireland want a second out half, and another out half cover is probably more important in the grand scheme of things rather than a wing. But as Gordon said, John, what happens if a wing goes down 5 minutes in?
Yeah, slight reshuffle in the back line. I think it's one of those things where anytime you go 6-2, there is a slight anxiety about it because of the fact that you can be left early on in the match. If, for example, Hugo was to get injured or suffer a reaction to his knee injury, suddenly you've got one player left after you bring the player on, Kieran Frawley, Conor Murray, to cover every other eventuality in the back line. So you have to keep your fingers crossed and hope that you can make the substitutions or replacements that you want to make during the game rather than have them foisted on you. So I think that's what Andy Farrell will be hoping for, and Irish supporters will be hoping for, that it's a proactive thing rather than a reactive thing. I think it'll be difficult, but they've gone down this road before, so they're obviously happy that they have cover. If you're asking me who I think would end up on a wing, I think Jemison Gibson-Park would end up on a wing, and I don't necessarily think he's quick enough to play there, but I think when you look at his influence as a nine and all he does for the way the team attacks, I think it's important that he stays where he is for as long as he's needed in that context. I think that would be ideal.
Would they not just shift Keenan into the wing, because at least he'd have the pace for defending, and put Frawley into 15?
They would. Sorry, yes, I'm assuming that Hugo Keenan got injured. But yes, no, you're right in the sense that that would be the logical first step, as Hugo Keenan has played on a wing before, obviously.
Last time the three of us were in the room, so to speak, obviously Gordon's not here, but in a room together, you did come in for a bit of stick on that. I think I can't remember why, but I remember you not being very happy after the end of that podcast. So I'm going to make it up to you, John, and show you a little bit of love. You profiled Emmanuel Feu-Wabosso in last weekend's paper, and lo and behold, a week later, he's now in the England team. You had a crystal ball that the English journalists didn't have until yesterday. Tell us about the Exeter wing. Why is he starting ahead of Elliot Daly for England?
I think he just brings a little more in attacking capacity. You saw a glimpse of it in the Scotland match for the try that he scored. He's very quick. He's very strong. He works a lot off his wing. I would expect him to pop up a lot in midfield if they get the sort of ball that they can use, quick ball. I would expect him to work in off his wing. I think they'll use him a lot down the blind side as well. He's got very good straight line speed. And he gives them something that they haven't really had, and a little bit more, in that capacity than Elliot Daly, I think, as a winger. And he's a natural winger as well. He's a kind of comes from, didn't play rep rugby to the best of my knowledge. And he was playing in what is England's third division kind of a little over 12 months ago. So it's been a rapid rise, I suppose, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I think he just adds that little bit. He gives them a cutting edge out wide, and we have spoken about this before when we're talking about Ireland teams facing players who are quick. So what Ireland will want to do is make sure in defence, that they put him under pressure, that they number up correctly, and that they don't let him appear all of a sudden in front of without casting any aspersions on the front row forwards. But you want to be careful. You want to keep an eye on him at all times, you know, in terms of where he pops up.
Yeah, just reading the English press last night when they predicted this, and this morning, Taunton Titans was the name of the team he played for 12 months ago. So big day for them. Not sure, I can't say I ever heard of them before before this came up. Darce, looking at the England team, Furbank is still at 15 instead of Stewart. George Ford still at 10. Lawrence and Slade in the midfield. They've made a change in the second row. Ollie Chesham moves to 6 and George Martin, a bit of extra bulk in there. I've listed a few things, but what stands out to you in that England side?
Yeah, like it looks very much more of an attacking backline than maybe the one that started the Six Nations in the opening match. But ultimately, I still think they're, you know, your main playmaker is George Ford. Like if the other 14 players are really, you know, individual, you know, able to create stuff. But, you know, George Ford is plays to systems. And ultimately, he's the main playmaker. So everybody is kind of wedded to the way he plays the game. And he doesn't engage the defensive line as an attacking threat. To me, that kind of nullifies an awful lot of the attacking threat that exists in the rest of the back line. Unless they get absolutely golden, you know, top quality ball off the top of the line out that, you know, Ireland aren't able to defend. They're already on the gain line, kind of receiving it, kind of thing. But that's not the England we've seen up until this point. They look for, they're heavily structured and heavily system based. And it's going to be hard to jump away from that, I think. So I'm not sure. I don't think they are sitting there going, we're going to score more tries in Ireland. I still think the way England set up for this is they set up to frustrate and just keep, you know, penalties to a minimum. I think as I put it in an article on Wednesday, it's like low penalty, high tempo, high passion game and try and win 6-3 kind of job.
Just to touch on the George Ford thing there, I think Ford is can be very dangerous off third or fourth phase. So if you go through, not off first phase, where he's pretty orthodox in what he does, but what he does have is vision and good hands, and he's able to draw players onto him, and he has that varied kicking game as well. And when he is effective, and it's not that often in recent times, it is in his ability to pick a pass and to put players in space. So I think that, and it goes back to Darce's point there, if England don't get that continuity, if they don't get three or four rucks, if they don't get over the gain line, then he is pretty orthodox in what he does and what he can do as well. And also he's got to be hidden away in the defensive line. I know people have said his defense has improved, and it has possibly, but he still doesn't defend in the orthodox 10 channel. They try and hide him away a little bit. So, you know, in those circumstances, it's up to Ireland. If Ireland can do what they've done so far in the tournament, which is to retain possession, to work through the phases, then eventually you expose him, you find him in the defensive line, and you've got opportunity there.
Yeah, and I think the flip side of that is on the defensive side, what Ireland do, you talk about Ireland doing what they do. I mean, Ireland are a very disruptive side at the breakdown these days. You know, talk about Caelan Doris hitting as many defensive rucks as he does. I think it's up there with the most in the tournament. They're very disruptive. You talk about quick ball, this Irish side looks reasonably well equipped to deal with that. Obviously, things can change. So certainly in that first 20 minutes of that game against Scotland, England got really quick ball and they looked really threatening. The problem was they just couldn't hold on to it. I think it was 22 handling errors was the figure. The game should have been out of sight almost with how England were attacking against Scotland. That's a blueprint, isn't it, John, for playing against Ireland as well. If they can get the quick ball, if they can get that attacking back line that Darce talks about firing, if George Ford's kicking game is giving them the platform that it did against Scotland, and crucially, they don't drop the ball, they're in a really good position.
Yeah, there's a lot of ifs in that.
A lot of ifs, yeah.
A lot of clauses in that sentence. So, yeah, the other thing you'd say is that Ireland have to be accurate. When you've got players like Ben Earl, Sam Underhill over the ball at the breakdown, Ireland need to be very good at the breakdown, need to be precise in that respect. But I think for England, the other point I'd make about them is that when you're trying to work to a game plan or to work to something that's unfamiliar, and I would describe some of what England are trying to do in an attacking capacity as unfamiliar in a system sense for the players. And it's still bedding in, and it hasn't bed in particularly well. Now, that might all go right on Saturday at Twickenham, but you can see that players are forcing things a little bit, either the lines they run, the passes they make, the offloads they're going for. And England have to, and I know it's a bit of a cliche, respect the ball, but it comes, they need to be very accurate in what they do, because Ireland won't need a huge, won't need an invitation. If they get on the ball, you're not getting it back in a general sense for a while, and they'll stress you. And the last thing England can do is give up the sort of number of handling errors that they did against Scotland. Ireland will make them pay for that.
The other thing is, Ireland did just play against arguably the biggest jackal threat in the tournament in Tommy Rafael, and they actually nullified him quite well. He only got one turnover on the day, which for him is a very slow day at the office, even if a lot of players would kill for one turnover every game. John talks about the attack there. There's a lot of talk in the English press this week that apparently the players aren't happy, that they're not working on the attack enough. They're just working on the defence. To me, that just seems a bit much ado about nothing, considering they've just brought in a new defence coach. It's Felix Jones, of course, former Ireland international, and he's bringing in a new blitz-style defence, which is really hard to implement. Does it particularly matter if they're prioritising their defence over their attack right now?
That would just, point to not a particularly happy camp. There's pressure on them. You've pressure on Borthwick, there's pressure on players. There's been fairly abject performances from them, while they have gotten a few results that have, third place, you can't get away from a third place in a World Cup. It was an excellent, excellent finish. But the World Cup aside, the performances from this English team now in 18, 19 matches have been, well below par. So I think there is pressure coming in on Borthwick, there's pressure coming on players, and that always comes out in funny ways. People have opinions, different opinions. Oh, we're not spending enough time in the attack, we're spending too much time in defence, why aren't we doing this, why aren't we doing that? That sometimes can point towards a divided camp. That's just the nature of sport. When things don't go right, they really don't go right. But that is the challenge that England have now, because they're in this kind of backs to the wall kind of thing. Another loss at home against Ireland, and it starts putting a lot of people in the crosshairs. That is a thing you can harmonise people on, and harmonise emotion, harmonise all those things. There are an awful lot of ifs around that. That can all be parked. It's like, lads, let's not worry about, are we doing too much in the attack? Are we doing too little on the defence? What are we doing? So let's just win 81-minute battles, whatever cliche you want to put into it. They just have to win all those little moments and stay in the hunt. And who knows what that's the message that's going into it. It'd be unusual if players are actively speaking into the media saying, "Oh, we're spending too much time on attack or defense." Though,
do you think that's the message? Is the message going to be that cliched? Because I don't know, if I was a player, and obviously I'm not, but you were, Darce. If you're a player and you're listening to those cliches, it just screams of somebody who hasn't really got a coherent plan.
I think, I jump in on this. I was going to say that, if you're looking over your shoulder, so if we talk about the English backline, you're kind of saying to yourself, George Ford is under pressure. Ollie Lawrence hasn't been convincing as a 12. Slade is not convincing as a 13. They've brought in a 21-year-old for his first start on the left wing. You've got Tommy Freeman, who's come in and who's been given a chance. And you've got George Furbank, who's under pressure because they want to go back. They feel that it's incongruous with when you look at Ford's kicking game and not having Freddie Stewart there at full back. So who in the back line is actually feeling comfortable at the moment? The answer is very few, if anybody. And when you're looking over your shoulder in the context of trying to make a system or to bed in a system, it can be very difficult. I would imagine it's distracting, and Darce might answer that question, whether it is or not. If there's a lot of uncertainty that surrounds a group of people.
So that's a good way of framing it, John. So when players buy into it. So here, I actually was talking with one of the guys in the cycle here with this, and so he was asking about what's unique about Andy Farrell. I was like, he doesn't have a unique game plan or anything. One of the key things he has done is he has involved all the players in the game plan. So it's their system rather than Andy Farrell's system. And I think that's possibly where the gap is with England. How much are they involved in the way they're attacking, the shape they're putting into it? It's probably been told play this way. And I've played in teams when you've been told to play away. And if it's not your natural game, you just look well below average. When you play in teams and you play in games, game plans that are structured, and you're allowed to show your own individuality in it and what your attributes are, you look like a superstar. I don't think England are there yet. Only time will tell which it is. Is it just teething pains in the way, say, like the first 5-6 games under Joe Schmidt took time to bed in, but then it kicked into gear? Or is this he's asking them to play a way that they're not really convinced they should be playing?
I'll continue my conversation with John O'Sullivan and Gordon Darcy after this short break.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
On ways of playing and how England are adjusting and everything, there's obviously been a lot of talk about blitz defences. In the interest of using this podcast purely as a medium to plug our own work, there'll be a piece going up tomorrow or Friday as you listen to this about kind of the history of the blitz defence, who came up with it, who's used it, because it was an intriguing passage last week where Andy Farrell claimed to have come up with it. Warren Gatland wrote a column saying he came up with it. Sean Edwards has been credited with it. Jack Nienaber, all of this stuff. But Darcy, you played against that Welsh team of the noughties that was Gatland and Edwards coached, where they brought that really fast line speed that looked to shut down defences. They won 3 Grand Slams doing it. Especially you as a midfielder, how do you get around that really aggressive style of defence?
Nothing happens in a vacuum. I think that's important in sport, and I think I've mentioned this before. The reason why South Africa's defence is so good and why Wales's defence was so good in the noughties was it was built on strong foundations, and that is from the scrum and the set piece. So when we were getting our, you know, starter play, like, I mean, met on the gain line by Jamie Roberts, Stephen Jones, and, you know, whoever else, you know, Martin Williams, whatever it is. And it's a, you know, it's a biscuit fight from the word go. Your first phase. So they're kind of stopping you at source. Even if you got, like, say, you got the gain line, they're already backed up, ready to accelerate onto it. So you're already behind the eight ball when you're playing into a system like that. What you need is a smart 10, which we did have, we always have had, which is, you know, Sexton O'Gara, that when the space in behind, because there is space with all of these defensive systems, there is space, you just have to be able to find them. So the couple of chips over the top, it softens that defense, is how it goes. And then it's trying to pick your moment to attack. At the moment, England are learning when, like, at the moment, they don't seem to have the feel for the defense. The set piece isn't going particularly well. So does that mean, you know, they're going up and in and getting past the ball without having earned that right to go past the ball? So if you've got, if you're the attacking team and you've got the ball in hand and you've got a step, you know, or even a step and a half with the ball, you'll be able to pick a pass. Good players will pick a pass. But when you're getting the ball and you don't have that step, that's when the defense is working really, really well. And you have to kind of tuck the ball, or you have to duck back into contact. That's when the defense is working. And that's when it's really, really hard because you're smothered. You're just protecting the ball rather than looking where the attacking opportunity is.
Jacques Nienaber, the new Leinster coach, of course, and Felix Jones' coaching mentor, famously said it takes 14 games for this blitz defence to bed in, for you to come used to it. And England are obviously nowhere near 14 games into that cycle.
I would argue that there are players who will never get it.
Okay.
ever get it.
We'll see. I guess in 14 games time with England, we can see if there are players who are still struggling. Gordon said there's always space, though. It doesn't matter the system. There's space. And obviously in the blitz, it's in behind. Sometimes it's out wide. Are Ireland equipped to find that space?
I think they are. I mean, the one thing that you can't do, if you survive, so if Bundee Aki survives the initial contact and gets his hands free, it means that everybody who's gone up on the outside for England is now in trouble. Because if he can make a half break or get his hands free and Robbie Henshaw runs a good line off him, just backs him to be able to win that initial contact, suddenly you're through and England are in trouble out wide. And I think that's something that Bundee has done brilliantly for Ireland in the tournament to date. He's managed to get to win those initial collisions or a lot of individual collisions that he's had. And it's given Ireland that go forward ball, whether it's his ability to get his hands free afterwards or a positive target for his pack, all of that sort of stuff. So I think Ireland will invest some, or he will invest some energy in carrying on that. And then you've got to be intelligent and kind of nuanced in what you do with that. But you're right, yes, there is space. And this, I think it's a really interesting test for Jack Crowley, because now he will be getting the hurry up from the English back row and defence. And if he's not getting perfect ball, then he has got to problem solve for himself. He's got to see where the space is on the pitch. He's got to decide that, you know, do we need to kick here? Do we need to get some territory? Do I need to take some of the heat off my centres? You know, I can't ship out, you know, ball that's not going to be good, that's not going to give Ireland an opportunity to attack from it. So I think it's a very good test for him. I think he's been superb. I think he's answered. He stood up to, or answered all the questions, if you like. I think this is another great opportunity for him to progress as a 10.
Darce, I'll give you the final word. Call Saturday for us, please.
Ah, oh, Christ.
hang on a second. I just want to take this to the bookies. Yeah, go on.
Yeah. Like, there's too many ifs, ands, and buts around this game. I think they're, like, say this all the time, 75% in favour of the home team. I think it's an Irish win. It is not going to be what the armchair supporters think will be. I expect an English team to show up, but I also expect an Irish team to show up. I see a close match, but I just think Ireland, just where they are at the moment, and assuming like no red cards, nothing like that, which we actually have to say has been two red cards in the last two matches between the two teams. I think, yeah, it's a lot closer than I think people are going to be. But ultimately, I just think Ireland have just a little bit too much experience and will be sharper for the post-performance from Wales.
Right, we will leave it there. My thanks to John O'Sullivan and Gordon Darcy. As always, my name is Nathan Johns. You've been listening to The Counter Ruck, sponsored by Nifty Business. Be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back on Monday, and we will review Ireland's Six Nations clash with England.